3, 2, 1.
Here we go!
Welcome, everyone, to the No Normal Show, brought to you by BPD. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm Desiree Duncan, Vice President of Health Equity and Inclusion at BPD, and I'll be your host for today. In this episode, I'm joined by a couple of friends, Chelsea Rice, Director of Engagement for BPD. Hi, Chelsea.
Hi there.
Good to have you back. I know it's been a couple of years.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
Yeah. And we have filmmaker and director Chad Tingle, fresh off of our first screening of our new film, Everybody's Work. Welcome to the podcast, Chad.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to be talking a little bit about igniting greatness. And we're very excited. This is something that is a passion for all of the work that we do here at BPD. But with this work, this is something that's been 2 years in the making. And it feels like almost like we gave birth to this last week. But that this project is called Everybody's Work. It's the latest documentary from The Shift Nursing. This was created by BPD in partnership with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. But before we jump into talking about this one, I want to just kind of hear from you. Like, what has been some impactful documentaries that have, I don't know, inspired you throughout your lives? Let's start with you, Chad.
So I think for me and definitely my generation, it's been Hoop Dreams. I saw that film as I was probably maybe in my third year of film school. It was really powerful. It was a film about these two basketball players in Chicago, living in a challenging neighborhood, trying to use basketball as a vehicle to get out. But the film did such a great job because the filmmaker followed the two players for such a big part of their lives, from the time they were little kids to being teenagers. It really spoke to me about what, you know, America is. And as an immigrant, it really left a powerful impact on me.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to have to check that out. Why have I not seen that? What am I doing with my life? Chelsea, what about you?
Yeah. Well, more recently, in the past few years, there was a film called Crip Camp. And it's all about the disabled community and activism in the 60s and 70s. And how there was this camp up in upstate New York, and it was a camp for disabled people and teenagers in particular. And so they would go to this camp every summer. And that's actually where the people who ended up advocating to pass the American Disabilities Act met each other and formed their friendships and built these relationships to last a lifetime. And it really was an amazing story about how they kind of created their own little world up there where they felt like they could help each other out and that the world wasn't kind of set up against them. And then they used that vision of this like summer camp to kind of forge a path to why can't the rest of the world be this way? It's a really powerful story. And the historical archival that they use is just, you know, a filmmaker that happened to be up there in the 70s, just kind of a college student that had a camera. So it was really an amazing film. I think it's on Netflix now.
Yeah, that was an impactful story. I remember that a couple of years ago. Just how groundbreaking of making just change in policy possible. I'll say that mine is, honestly, it's probably the one that I've seen the most, and it's Paris is Burning. It's a story, a theme that it feels like every couple of years it resurfaces as a relevant topic. Like last summer, it came back into vogue because of Beyonce's tour and the album Renaissance One, Act One. But it's been something that's always just been a part of the queer community, the lexicon, especially of Black and Brown folks. And when I think of something that has impacted, something that keeps showing up again, again, and again in my life. So yeah, All right. So we're going to shift into our next conversation, which is we've had some guests on from the shift nursing work over the years a couple of times. But if you could, Chelsea, just kind of give us a quick reiteration and overview of what the shift platform is.
Yeah, so this is a community engagement platform for nurses around health equity. It's really meant to educate and entertain at the same time frontline nurses about this issue that often isn't talked about in nursing school or training or education. Many of the nurses that are out there in the front lines, this has only recently been a part of nursing school education. So it was a real mission of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to try and find a way to reach nurses about their role in health equity. And they really do have an important role to play given their more intimate interactions with patients and especially the roles that nurses play in different communities, you know, as community health workers or kind of being adjacent to social workers, even in certain situations, they can really make a difference in helping their patients overcome social determinants of health.
And as a program that we've created for, you know, one of our clients, this is a deep understanding of an audience that we have figured out to bring forth content to, mostly focus on social media from the beginning, but we have found other various ways to reach and have communication and engagement with this audience. So from a podcast to our first film, now to our second film, you know, some of this has garnered a couple of awards from the Webby Awards to the Addies and all that good stuff. It just shows the impact of deep and storytelling to really get the message across. But it's not just about getting the message across. It's about engaging and deeply understanding who your audience is and what they need and want to hear from you. So going into our latest project within Shift is our documentary, Everybody's Work. When Beth Toner, our client lead, came to us and said, I want you to focus on addressing racism in nursing. You know, the team, we got together and started researching all the things to look for solutions because we don't want to just put more disparity data out into the world. We want to actually talk solutions. And so as I was looking for this, and then of course, simultaneously looking for a director and Chad, I was thinking of how can I kind of surmise all the things that we want to put out here into kind of a quick brief to give to a director that's kind of coming into the topic, maybe a little bit blind. Because I know, Chad, you've been involved and you've told a ton of health and healthcare stories throughout the years. But I'll just give a quick highlight. And I would love to hear from you, Chad, about your thinking around how you took all of these, like, at times it felt maybe disparate ideas and concepts and bringing them and weaving them into one story. But when we first started researching this, I ran across this podcast and book by Heather McGee called The Sum of Us. And I loved it so much because it talked about the effects and how it costs something for everyone, that essentially the work of DEI and inclusion and general health equity, this isn't just about something for folks of color or folks of minoritized existence. This affects everybody. And her first story about how in the 60s, where if Black kids got into a pool, then the community pool would then be drained. And so then no one can swim, and how that really is the story of racism throughout America that we need to understand and unpack of, like, why are we shooting ourselves in the foot here? The other piece was also around relationships between women, realizing that RNs are majority women and the majority white women. There was a podcast episode that I remember listening to earlier that year. This was in 2022, and it was the We Can Do Hard Things with Glennon Doyle podcast. And Lovey Ajayi, author, blogger, all-around shenanigan maker, she was on the episode, and they were talking about friendships between Black and white women. And I was like, oh, that's very interesting. Some of the dynamics. I highly encourage you to listen to that episode. It's episode 61. But it was that, and then also if you don't have some of these oppressions, then how are you going to know that someone else is going to have them? And you almost have to just trust what people say to you. That came from a TED talk from Michael Welp that I was learning about how, like, he was actually talking about white men weren't aware that others were having a different experience than them, and how just opening your eyes and listening and just trusting what the other person says to you can help you better understand and, like, just create better relationships and, you know, I guess getting rid of bias as well as a hope as well. But anyways, through a bunch of those random things and podcasts and books and stuff at Chad when we brought him on board. And I was just kind of curious, just from the start, like, what was that experience for you, knowing that you have your own philosophy on how you like to create, make films?
Yeah. You know, I think the material wasn't, I think wasn't the hard part, because it's actually kind of how my brain works anyway. I kind of take these themes and I pull them from different references, and you know, sometimes it's for movies and narrative things, and I try to find these connections. I think the hardest part was the time frame of trying to pull it all together. But I think, you know, all the material you sent was pretty grounded in sort of a philosophy that I had anyway. And I, you know, going back to the Heather McGee book, I think the one story that really resonated with me right away was the fact that the kid that drowned in the Baltimore Harbor, it were kids from all different backgrounds. It wasn't just like, you know, there was a black kid, I think it was a Jewish kid. They were all these kids that went to school together, and they couldn't integrate at a pool racially. So they decided to go swim in the harbor, and a kid drowned. And that really sort of was, that story really stuck with me. There was a few others as well. I think the one about the fast food workers in Kansas City, going back to what you were saying, Des, about how people who have a different lived experience, but they may come from a different background, but at the same time, you have a lot more in common than you think you do. And I think that if I was to think about the way I like to make films, it's exactly that. It's taking these macro issues and then really kind of finding these stories of individuals and really imprinting the macro on the micro. And really kind of talk about how that impacts us, not just in a once in a lifetime moment, or, you know, or maybe once a month, but really daily.
Yeah. And I know, Chelsea, you and I, when we were first like, okay, we have our director, now it's time to drum up as many people as possible just to talk to, because we had a couple of key folks in mind, but, you know, we needed to hear more stories. And I know, Chad, you wanted to kind of have more of a well-rounded perspective. Chelsea, just kind of curious your thoughts around the stories that we had originally heard during those interviews, and then how being on set, being able to capture them and just being in the moment. Just want to hear from you, your perspective of being in the room when these things are occurring.
Yeah, it was really interesting because, you know, we did the pre-interviews, right? We heard a lot about different people's stories, and but, you know, this was in a more private environment. And so, you know, these conversations could go very long. And then, so it's really interesting once you get someone on camera, sometimes they talk about something a little different than what you previously, like, talked to them about. And, you know, I heard from a couple subjects that they thought that they were going to talk about one thing, and then they ended up in the room and on camera talking about something not entirely different, but not exactly the direction they initially thought they were going to take with their dialogue. So it's really interesting what kind of comes out once there's a camera there, and you're maybe being reminded that this is a platform and this is a place where you can really make an impact on a systemic level. I would say that, you know, we did capture a lot of, like, really wonderfully beautiful personal stories in the film. But in particular, I went to the shoot in Seattle with Dr. Monica McLemore. And and she and I discussed even that at the screening, how what she said in the pre-interviews wasn't exactly what she ended up saying on camera and what exactly ended up in the film. And so she was like, I still made, like, the points I wanted to make, but they were bigger points. They were more systemic points than I think that she had initially anticipated in what would come out on camera. So, Yeah, it's really fascinating. And it's a testament to you, Chad. She was complimenting you in that conversation, saying how you brought that out. You made the conversation bigger than just the one person, right? And you were really trying to tie it all together. And I remember, you know, just even in our like morning sessions, like reviewing questions and things, how systemic we were trying to keep it. And, you know, bringing those human stories out to represent systemic change and systemic issues and, you know, big conversations about power and what it takes to change things and what it takes to be an individual trying to make a difference. And then also thinking through like our lens of pillars, right? The academia, institutional, interpersonal, the workplace, and how all of that kind of ladders up to this, like to this structural racism issue and creates the system that people are fighting against. So it was really, yeah, it really was fascinating to see. And then of course the end result, right? To see all these little stories from people come together into a comprehensive narrative. And when you're in it, you're not necessarily, you know, you're like, is this going to come together? Right? Like, how are we going to package all of these interviews and this hours and hours of footage into something concise and direct and, but also emotionally moving? I mean, really, it was a bit of magic seeing it all culled through into one comprehensive narrative that not only moved you, but also taught you something you didn't know before and also showed you such a range of lived experiences. I really am proud of like the diversity of the ages, the regions, the ethnic and racial backgrounds of everyone that we got in this film. I thought that was just really amazing and I think powerful at the end.
Yeah, Chelsea, I want to go back to something you had mentioned earlier on and something I picked up on with Chad. Like in each film that I've done, it's been interesting to see the different methodologies that each director takes. And, you know, Chad, you were pretty prescriptive in the fact that you're not sharing the questions. You don't want this to feel like it's, you know, prescribed and that they practice, although like I know some people did, they cheated in practice. But Chad, would love to hear just kind of your overarching thoughts of like the method of how you go about making sure that you get the right thing, the most authentic piece of the person while you're in the room, and then how you translate that when there's, as Chelsea mentioned, like hundreds of hours of footage on the floor and you got to chop it all down to one.
Yeah. I think for me, it's, you know, I can be somehow I've figured out a way to be a little bit disarming with people. I never share the questions. I'll share the topics because I feel like when you share questions, people rehearse them. Right. And when they rehearse them, they have the perfect idea of what they want to say in their brain. And it never comes out exactly the way you want to. So I'm always happy to share like, hey, these are the topics we're going to talk about. But I also feel like it's also sometimes I feel like people don't see themselves in the lens that you as an outsider may see them. And I think that they sort of get and we all do this, right? We get caught up in our daily function of how we need to move through the world. And I'm looking at it from an outside lens of like, I see this person in a much different light. And so I always feel like my job is to try to present them in the light that they don't see themselves. Because sometimes I think it's much bigger and much greater than they see the value themselves. And so I'm always looking for that and also always looking for the redemptive narrative in people. You know, I feel like people don't value themselves as much as maybe others do. And so I'm always looking to kind of show it back to them that like, hey, you know, you have more value here than you think you do. And I think, you know, Monica is someone that I watched the first interview that you guys did and had a call with her. And I felt like, wow, you know, this person's amazingly impressive. And I got to be really prepared, right? I can't walk into this like not prepared because she's so steeped in the data and so steeped in her lived experience that and a lot of the other participants were as well. They knew their stuff and I wasn't the data geek. So I really had to really focus on the data that I did know that Chelsea, you would arm me with or Desiree, you would give me. But also really looking at who they were as people and really trying to, again, going back to what I was saying about the macro and the micro, using the data as a part of it, but not the entire part of the story, right? What is it personally that's driving you to really do this work?
You know, it was probably the highlight for me of being in the room during the interviews was witnessing when they hit their stride. Because at first, you know, you're just kind of answering the questions and one off and kind of, I guess, essentially warming up. But then once they were warmed up and they hit their stride, they just hit fact after data after it was really incredible. I was just in the background, like completely geeking out. But so from there and thinking about how you want to set up the questions and the interviews, but there's the other element of, you know, how does this visually come to life, the music, how does it make you feel? Would love to hear your thoughts around some of the creative attributes that went into, you know, bookending essentially, you know, the information that's shared, but then the stories that share, but like, how do you then create more emotion through the visuals and the audio?
That's a great question. You know, this one was a little bit different than other things. I think in the past I've been sort of fortunate to work on these projects where I'm doing more kind of verite, fly on the wall perspective type of things. And so I'll spend days with people over the course of maybe 6 months or a year. And so, you know, the first one is our first couple of shoots, maybe you're trying to get just really the good information that's going to provide the narrative bed. And then you can sort of go back and go, oh, you know what? This would be great to get this person at sunset. This was a little bit different in the sense that we had to, and I was a little nervous about this actually, that we'd only have like one day with a person or like 6 hours, you know? So I really had to kind of lean into this idea of, and talk to, you know, the director of photography, John Anderson Beaver, is that like, hey, we're going to have to really be nimble, right? The interview for the narrative is actually the most important thing, but we really have to look for any moment that we can capture that really kind of conveys an emotion or conveys what this person's trying to say. And so I think one of the things, decisions I made really early was, okay, talking to these people on Zoom ahead of time was really helpful. It actually, in a way, people actually divulge more information over Zoom than I thought they would. You know, we had people crying, which really said something to me that, okay, this is really, people are really passionate about this. And so that process of taking those interviews, transcribing them, really getting at the text, subtext of what they're saying, I was like, okay, I feel like everybody that we've talked to, they were like testifying. So we kind of came up with this idea of using this iDirect, which is something this filmmaker Errol Morris uses, where the subjects or the participants look directly in the camera. And I felt like that was really necessary because I really wanted them to speak to the audience directly versus speaking to me off camera where it looks like you're having a conversation with somebody else. And I felt like the people that we were speaking to in these pre-interviews, even the ones that we didn't include in the film, they were so powerful when they looked at you directly over Zoom that I felt like that's how I wanted them to address the audience. And I think that that was a really good decision we made early on. And then, you know, the other thing was having two cameras so we could have that sort of like almost one wide shot of, not wide shot, but a wider shot at a wider focal length of people looking in the camera. So as an audience, you really can't get away from them. You're really on bated breath with everything they say. And then have a camera on the side where we could get hand movements, or if somebody took a moment to cry or to take a break, we could catch that other emotion as well. And have John really move around to really kind of look for other things that maybe I wouldn't see as I was interviewing the participants. So I gave him a little bit of freedom to sort of find things that I wouldn't see. And I think that comes down to trusting your collaborators. And I think in the editing process, it's the same thing with Jeff Boyette, our editor. I'd worked with him on other projects where I'm just like, take this and let me see what I don't see, right? I know what I see based on the questions and the responses and the sound bites that I've pulled and the sound bites that maybe you and the team at BPD liked. But I was like, hey, what is it I'm not seeing, right? I think a perfect example of that in the film is the one thing where Bridget actually found this archive because I gave her a link to an archive that I use. And she found this thing of these nurses from the 60s with an LPN, an LVN, and, you know, a registered nurse, and how Anna Valdez talks about this caste system of nursing. And we sent the clip to Jeff. I hadn't really looked at the whole thing, but he's like, hey, I found this little nugget here that specifically responds to what Anna is saying, right? That's giving him that freedom to kind of bring his storytelling abilities to the table. And so I think in that sense, it's a team effort. And you know, for me, the collaboration in this kind of filmmaking is really what makes the best project possible.
Yeah, and it's that like trusting of the creative process and trusting like who you're working with, which of course, like, you know, takes time. Granted, you've worked already closely with John and Jeff, but that, you know, Bridget, Chelsea, and myself were, you know, newer to that and building that trust. But from the beginning, I know that our creative director, Bridget Benyus, had this vision also of how she wanted this to come to life, you know, more from the, kind of the graphical standpoint, the animations and how that is going to show up. I know she'd had some original thoughts around like how can we, you know, utilize animation to help tell the story and move it forward. Given that this wasn't necessarily an action oriented story, it was more a story of, you know, of solutions and what folks can do, but that ended up being so much of the archive, and that was something she was very passionate about uncovering and enhancing, you know, what exists, what the photos that we would get from the folks, the nurses featured, as well as looking for that archival footage to help weave that and continue that story. But would love to jump into the fact that, okay, all of this came to fruition with the final product, that even as we're looking at the final product, there's always like things you still kind of want to like, ooh, there's that I want to adjust. But curious your initial thoughts, especially after we've been so entrenched with it for the past year that, you know, watching it over and over again, it's like, it's almost like things just become like rote to us. But being in the room with everyone this past week of watching new folks watch the film, and it to me, I don't know about you, but it breathed a new life into this whole project. But Chelsea, would love to hear your thoughts and just some of the responses to the film so far.
Yeah. So when we were at the screening in DC, I had the privilege of actually interviewing people for their reactions and responses to the film before and after. And, you know, first of all, like just even people arriving into the room, I mean, they were just saying it's so important they'd seen the trailer. And, you know, they were just saying how important it was to even anticipation of seeing most of these women were nurses, or most of the people in the room were nurses of color. They were majority women, but they were talking about to see their story told in this way and to see that someone had committed time and attention to capturing this issue. They were just kind of bubbling with anticipation of being in that room. And afterward, I mean, many were very emotional. While they were watching the film, we heard like applauses and like snaps and, you know, call outs when people said things that resonated with them, celebration of their friends on screen. Also just even these little moments that we, you know, thought were cute, and people laughed, like audibly laughed out loud at different things that were nice little comedic reliefs that I know Chad had incorporated in the work. So I thought that was really special. And then, yeah, doing these interviews afterward, the emotion of people saying that they don't feel alone anymore and that they feel like their experience is not an isolated one, and that the things that they see and witness are, you know, the bias that they see and witness is not just a one-off incident, that it is a pattern, that they aren't alone in experiencing it. And many even said that I heard someone say on screen something that I have also experienced, and to just have that captured and was so moving for them, and to feel like they have someone bore witness, you know, to their experience in nursing was really powerful.
Yeah. And I know we had a little over 200 folks in the room together at the Howard Theater. And, you know, to be honest, I was just kind of a nervous wreck of just making sure that everything went well, because I wanted this to be a special experience for these folks, you know, both those that are featured in the film, but those that are in the industry, to your point, Chelsea, of like, wow, this is also my story being told, and recognizing that we couldn't possibly tell all the stories, but, you know, we have a goal, a pipe dream of being able to do so. But I'm curious for you, Chad, that moment of it's all coming together, you're up on that stage introducing the film. Just want to hear kind of your thoughts of, you know, what that moment felt like, and also just what you've gathered from the responses of the film.
Yeah. You know, for me, I never watch my films when they're in a public screening. Like usually I get up and I go outside or I stand in the hallway somewhere. It's just because I obsess over the things that I maybe wanted to change and couldn't, because again, you just have to let it go at some point. But yeah, it was great to hear like the call outs and people laughing. Like one of the things I know we talked about was in the beginning as we were editing was this idea of having Dr. Monica McAmor's cat, right? And I felt like things like that really kind of, again, kind of what I was saying earlier, gives people a different lens of what you might see in her typical social media post, right? And I wanted to kind of bridge that for people so they could see that, hey, this person's not up here. They're experiencing the same thing. Because I think it's one of the things that Toloa talks about a lot. Toloa Sharp, who's in the film, talks about the fact that she's on the commission to address racism, but she is only, you know, has a bachelor's in nursing, and a lot of people she's interacting with are PhDs or they have multiple master's degree. And so a lot of times she said in the beginning, she felt like she didn't measure up, but eventually she realized like, hey, I have just as much to say as these other people. And I think having people come to me and talking to me about similar stories like that and saying how that resonated, I think is always the best thing for me, is to get when people come up to me as a filmmaker and say what they loved about it, or maybe even what they didn't like about it, right? At the end of the day, my job is to try to engage the audience and have some sort of an emotion. And a lot of people were really emotional after. I mean, I was talking to Dr. Lucinda Canty, and she was like overwhelmed. She was like literally exhausted. She's like, I have to go and take a nap. And I had some conversations too with Dr. Katie Boston-Leary as well, where people were just like, they were just emotionally overcome. Because as you were saying, Chelsea, like they were able to see that they're not the only one experiencing this, right? No matter how high up the ranks you get, there's still always this level of bias and just things that come in, people not trusting you or people questioning your abilities. I think that was really powerful to hear people come up to me that I hadn't met or who were just audience members kind of say like, hey, you know, you really, really captured our voices.
You know, and as this episode is essentially kind of a proof point around the igniting greatness and thinking about all the ways in the storytelling, in that content, engagement, deep storytelling is all about creating those experiences for the audiences you want to engage with. So you mentioned, Chad, the Monica's cat and a couple other things. So in the poster, the film poster that Bridget created, you know, she put a bunch of different Easter eggs in the various hands around the poster, you know, creating an experience for the nurses to, you know, not only just watch the film, but be galvanized by it to then go out and like spread the gospel, essentially, all the way to, you know, what we're going to continue doing with the film to provide that. So I want to hear from you, Chelsea. Where can folks go to find the film?
Yeah. So at everybodyswork.com, right now we are making the film available for private screening. So you can request to host a screening, fill out a form, just kind of tell us a little bit about you and where and when you're looking to host it. And we'll provide you with a host a screening kit that has promotional materials, as well as sample social posts if you need them, as well as even discussion decks to foster conversations during the screening and after people watch it. So, and also the articles that we have on the site that dig deeper into the issues across these different pillars. So that's a really helpful kit for people to be able to put on an event for themselves. And we'll just, the screenings are available for free. We can provide the film for free. We just ask that it's used for educational purposes and that you don't charge your audience for screening the film. So, but other than that, we just want to know who wants to have a screening and to be able to know more about you and who you are to track the impact of this work. It's important to be able to continue to do it into the future, is to know exactly who it reached and the scope and scale of that impact. And it's really been powerful so far. We've had over 200 requests to host a screening since our screening in DC. And so we're making our way through it. If you hear this episode and we haven't gotten back to you yet, please know that we're making our way down the list and trying to prioritize based on timing and when people are trying to host a screening. So we will get to you, but we're just so overwhelmed and grateful for the response of this community. The nursing community is like no other community I've ever witnessed, a professional community. They are galvanizing. They are supportive of one another. It's almost like if you're a nurse, you're immediately a friend to another nurse. And I think that that is part of the power of the shift nursing work as well, that we understood that nurses speak a special language to one another. And because of the really difficult work that they do every day, it's almost like bonding through trauma, to be quite frank. And so their relationships are very powerful. And it's like they immediately know each other and support each other. So it's been really wonderful to see this nursing community, and particularly nurses of color, rally around this film and want to get it into as many spaces and places as they can.
Yeah, because each of these folks that are in the film, they're doing such incredible work in their own spaces and their own institutions that we want to get as many people aware and like maybe even joining them, joining the movement, and really unpacking the fact that this is something that we can actually tackle. This isn't something that we just have to live with. Any final words of just what this work has, you know, meant to you from either a professional or a personal level or both? I'm going to start with you, Chad.
Yeah, it meant a lot to me because, you know, I think about my mother. I think had the circumstances been different, I was telling some folks, my mom was a home health aide for over 40 years and took care of a lot of people, you know, and Monica talks about this idea of transitions. A lot of people transitioned through her hands. So I thought about her a lot through this process. I think had the circumstances been different, she would have been an amazing nurse because she certainly had the emotional aptitude. The education piece just wasn't there. But yeah, I certainly thought of her, thought about her a lot throughout this process, and also me navigating her healthcare journey for 2 years before she passed away. So I interacted with a lot of nurses, a lot of doctors. So, yeah, I brought it, and you know, it was sort of like this project sort of came to me. I was saying to Beth, our client, this project really came at the right time for me, where I am just age-wise and patience-wise as a filmmaker. I think had you guys reached out to me 5 years ago, I don't think I would have been the right person to make this film. I think, you know, this film came along when I was 46 years old. And I think I'm just at a point in my life where I see things through a different lens as a father, as a husband. This came along at the right time. And I think I was able to really add my value to it because of my lived experience.
Yeah. So, my career started off as a healthcare reporter and a journalist, and you know, it's a hard industry to be in for sure. And so I've made many career transitions since then, but healthcare has always been the through line through every job I've had in over the past 13 years. And I think that one of the first jobs I ever had, which this is kind of amazing. When I thought about it a few years ago, when I was starting the shift nursing project, is that I was working for Minority Nurse magazine. That was one of the very first jobs I ever had out of college, was writing about the minority nurse experience and writing these articles just about career advancement, also health equity issues. One of my first stories was about how children of color with autism are often have later diagnoses because people have prejudice and, you know, attribute their behavior to, you know, a behavioral problem and not to something that could be more serious that they need like special help and treatment around. So I've always had this interest in health equity. And before I even had a word for it or before the phrase was more colloquial. So getting to work on the shift nursing project has been so deeply special for me, but also being able to translate kind of reporting and my written skill set. Normally I'm a writer, but taking all those skills and translating them into helping to produce a film is also just kind of proves to me that storytelling is impactful in all of its forms and formats. And if you are a storyteller, you really can take those skills and apply them to many different mediums. And even if you don't know how to work a camera, you can still influence impactful storytelling. And I think just seeing the response of this and also the response from healthcare systems, hospitals and health systems have also reached out to host screenings. And this is just largely important to the healthcare system at large. The nursing workforce is in dire straits, and we can't afford to be losing people to because they feel that their workplace environments are hostile to them or don't support them or they don't feel safe there. And therefore, health systems really do have a role to play here. And if we can change minds and lives with a film like this, I just think that the payoff is going to be huge for more nurses to feel that they have a safe space and that their work and their role is valued and that the color of their skin should not make a difference there. And so that I think that fight for health justice is has really been amazing to see the response to this, and that also this is the time for something like this, that people are ready to hear it. They're ready to take it to all the places where they feel that this conversation needs to happen.
1,000%. And, you know, similarly, for me, from a professional standpoint, this work, you know, but Shift Nursing in general, as well as this documentary, it's a culmination of all the things I've done throughout my life. So essentially a storyteller since college, journalism major, PBS, television, podcasting, radio. I was all about telling the stories of others. I never really wanted to be in front. I always wanted to help others tell their story better. And then from a personal standpoint, you know, my mom was very sick a couple of years ago, about 2 years ago. And she had just started getting better, like right when we were starting to plan this, August 22. And she was in the hospital in and out for about 6 months. And watching how she was poorly treated by a number of folks, whether they were physicians or nurses, just really didn't sit well with my soul. And as I was talking to other folks, not necessarily involved in this project, and telling them what we're working on, they had the same stories of their loved ones themselves not being heard, you know, not being cared for the way that they should be as a dignified existence, as Dr. McLemore would say. And, you know, that was my why. Anytime that a person would tell their story about, whether it was in the film or just kind of passing conversations, like, this is why this is important. This is why we're doing this, is to make folks aware and then hopefully change this for the next batch of folks so that they do get the care that they, you know, deserve as a human. So, all right, we'll wrap this up. Chelsea, Chad, thank you so much for being here. And for all of you listening, thank you so much for joining in. If there's something you want us to cover on the No Normal Show, shoot us an email at nonormal@bpdhealthcare.com. And make sure to share the show with friends and colleagues and give us a review and rating on iTunes and Spotify, preferably 5 stars. All of that would be appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all. And we'll talk to you next week. 3.